say ah.
Welcome to Open Wide Say Ah with Leka Lolas. This is obviously a sex talk podcast where I will be talking about sex. So I hope you have the right people sitting around you. And if you don't, it's time to send them away so that you can get a lesson with me. Today's topic, I am talking about the anatomy of the vagina. And I thought I would just enlighten some people or maybe just highlight some things and remind you about the vagina and the anatomy of the vagina. And for those people that are wondering when I'm going to speak about the penis and the anatomy of the penis, I'm not going to. I'm not here for that. But if you really want to know something about the penis or how to stimulate a penis or different interactions with a foreskin or no foreskin, you can hit me up in my DMs, yo, and I'll give you some advice. But I don't feel like giving a whole lesson on, you know, this penis and the skin and the wee hole and how to push down the skin and stimulate it. Yeah, nah, boring. The vagina for me is something that is a lot more complex. And even though I have one myself, sometimes I forget, you know, that not everyone has one and not everyone knows how to enjoy it or use it or understand it. So if I could explain without showing you a video or a picture, because I feel like it's complicated. It's like a little shell. It's got like layers. It's got little parts. And without seeing it visually, I've got to give you like some kind of reference. So I'm going to use an orange or grapefruit, right? Peel the grapefruit, peel the orange. I don't know if that's sexual, but anyway. Now open the orange or the grapefruit in half. You've got like the hole and the gap, you know, where there is no fruit in the middle. That little center and gap and hole, that is the vagina entry. That is what we call a vagina. Now, a lot of the time, people will just call the whole thing a vagina or the outside a vagina. That's wrong. The vulva is what's on the outside. The clitoris is also on the outside. It's part of the vulva. The inside, the entrance and the path where a baby comes out, you know, like down the canal, where penis or toy or fingers or tampon or menstrual cup, where the things enter and go into, there's like a vagina path. That whole thing is the vagina. Now, when people want to like wash and clean and, you know, like cleanse the vagina, you can't put stuff inside to wash and clean. Like if you had to use a soap and you put the soap inside your vagina or like a little bit on a face cloth or a sponge or whatever you use, you will end up getting like an itch or a burn or like an irritation because you're changing the bacteria that's inside. So the only two organs that actually cleans itself is the eye and the vagina. So hearties, tomatoes for the penis. The penis does not clean itself. You better be washing that skin, yo. But a lot of women, even themselves or people with vaginas, they think that you don't have to wash the outside because it cleans itself. And that's not true. Like your lips, like you get two layers of lips on the outside. So you know that orange now where the hole is, you've got like the slices of the orange. What do you call them? The wedges. The outside one, the biggest one, is the labia majora. That's like your furthest biggest lips on the outside. Sometimes people have like a kink or a wave in them. Sometimes they have a lot coming out. Sometimes they have a little coming out. Sometimes they have everything stuck inside. Not everyone's vagina is the same. But that is the labia majora. Then you get another fold closer to that hole of the fruit. And that is the labia minora. That's the smaller, thinner lips. In between there is where like your sweat goes, your discharge goes. If you have your period, sometimes blood is sitting in there. That's where like you might like develop some odor or some sweat. It's like sitting in the like folds of your vagina, in between skin basically. That you have to wash, you know, and you don't have to use soap because a lot of people like it kind of activates your thrush by using soap and by using like, you know, you strip away the pH levels, you change the bacteria of your vagina, but you need to use something that's going to break down the oils and the sweat. It's like your underarm, you know, and especially if you do have pubic hair, the way that you wash it and look after it and clean it, you got to make sure you're breaking down that sweat and that discharge because otherwise that's just going to stay there and create odor. But there's a part that a lot of people just skip. And you know, when you have an orange and you kind of had that like little round, like tip little hard thing there at the top and you can like peel it off, you know, That I'm going to use as the clitoris. Okay, that is it. If I've got the hole in the middle and I've got the wedges of the orange or grapefruit around it, that's the labia minoris and majoris. Right at that top, that little point where that little hard thing was or still is, that is the clitoris. And sometimes it's hidden by like a hood, like it's got a piece of skin almost over it. And the best way to reveal it, in my experience, where the vagina has like pubic hair or no hair, to kind of like lift it up and open it up and open up the different like folds of the lip. And then you have, ta-da, like this beautiful pearl hard thing sitting there. And that is where most women will actually have an orgasm. And I think people think that by, especially with heteronormative sex of like male and female genitalia, like penetrative sex, you know, like a penis or finger going into the vagina and moving fast or moving slow, whatever, they think that penetration equals orgasm. And that's not necessarily the truth. Most women will have an orgasm by outside stimulation, you know, like surface cum is what we call it. Like when I was even a child, I would have my vagina on everything, from teddy bears to pillows to chairs to, I mean, even as an adult, to rubbing my vagina against like my leg or my foot, or, and that very quickly makes the vagina wet and makes the vagina like ready to orgasm. That's why foreplay is such a big thing, because you got to play with those lips and with the outside parts, and you got to play with the clit, and you got to stimulate everywhere and tease everywhere before you even go to that wet, moist, beautiful, warm hole that you're going to put something in. And you don't always have to put anything in. I hope that somehow kind of explains the picture of the anatomy of the outside of the vagina. Now, the inside of the vagina is something completely different. And that is not necessarily the same for most people. The outside looks completely different, like our faces, like our eyes, like our bodies. We are not the same people. But the inside of the vagina has like a kind of standard setup of your ovaries, which are like these round pockets. If I was standing straight on, I've got like in line with my boobs running down, I've got an ovary pocket on one side and an ovary pocket on the other side. And then I've got these tubes that kind of run to the middle where like my belly button in line with my belly button is. Those are the fallopian tubes. So your ovaries kind of release an egg in your cycle, and it runs through these fallopian tubes, and it comes to come sit nice in the uterus, which is like this middle waiting area. And that is not where the penis is. It's like further up. And an egg sits there and waits for semen to now fertilize this egg. And it waits and it waits and it waits and it waits, and it's sitting against the wall, and it's making a, like a nest, and you know, it's like gathering all these nutrients, and you know, like holding on to the white cells and the red cells, and like making everything safe. And it's like, come, 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 I want a baby. And then you don't want a baby, and you have safe sex, or you don't have sex, and now your body kind of goes into withdrawal and has to get rid of that egg and the lining, and how this wall has made like this safety little nest for this baby, because there was no semen and nothing has come. And then it breaks down everything and it comes through the cervix. Now the cervix is, if I could explain where that vagina hole was, and then there's a path where the penis or your fingers or tampons go in, right above there is kind of like a plug. And that plug is the cervix. And the cervix is like a tiny little hole, like the back of your pencil. That's how far it opens up. The only time it opens up further than that is when you dilate for giving birth. Like that has to open up 10 centimeters for a baby to come through. That plug has to open up 10 centimeters for a baby to come through. That's all I want to say. Unless a doctor opens it up to like insert an IUD, which is like a copper IUD, or you get a hormone IUD, which is a form of contraceptive. It's like a T that sits there to prevent sperm from fertilizing the egg. Because remember I said the penis sits in that path and then it can, you know, like release its semen. But because there's that little hole by the plug, the semen goes through. And then if you have a copper IUD or a hormone IUD, it will kill the sperm before it gets to the egg. If you don't, and you don't use contraceptives, the semen goes through that cervix and it goes to the egg and it fertilizes and we start forming a fetus. But yes, so that is where the egg sits. And when you have to break that down, or your body is breaking it down, you start getting a period. So out of that cervix now, your body has to force that thick tissue and lining and all the nutrients and the egg, and everything's got to come out. And that comes with, like, you know, a whole period that we see that, you know, is red and brown and thick and gooey and strange. If you get to actually see your period, like, I remember I used to use pads as, like, a young child or teenager, and I enjoyed, like, using a pad because I could see my period. Like, I could see, okay, so now there's, like, red, or it's, like, a little bit brown, and there's, like, thick pieces on it, which is, I know, like, sounds really strange, but that is the truth. Like, I think a lot of people that don't get a period think that a period is just like this shitload of blood, you know, like a river flowing, and it's just a whole lot of blood. Sometimes there's no blood during the day, and then all of a sudden there's like a gush of blood, or like you are sitting and all of a sudden you get up and you feel like, what just fell out of me? And it is the strangest thing, but then it's like thick pieces of the lining, or like it looks like, oh, that could actually be a part of an egg that just came out of me. But that is part of the vagina cleaning itself. And that is part of the cleansing cycle. And I think as like a society, we've made this period like, oh, gross, nasty, like, oh, don't touch me, I have a period. And you know, like, we've made it something ugly, and we've made it something very taboo. And I think it's unfair, because if we understood it, and I think especially for like boy learners at school, if they understood what was happening to the body and understood the vagina and understood the cycle, and that it was like cleaning itself and it's actually not dirty and it doesn't stink, it smells like blood. If they understood all of that, they would maybe, you know, appreciate it, or be a bit more sympathetic, or be like, okay, cool, like your body's actually going through the cycle and it's very natural. But as society, we've really made period like horrible. And I, even as an adult, I'm not going to lie and say I enjoy having a period. I fucking hate having a period. Like, I get cramps for like 3 days before I have my period. Then I get cramps for like the first day of my period. I get pimples along my chin and my jawline, because that's where like your hormones sit. Or some people get it like on their forehead and their jawline. That's hormonal pimples. I get cravings for sweet stuff like a week before and the first like 3 days of my period. All I want is sugar and white bread and like peanut butter and jam on a white bread sandwich. Yes, please. And I'm moody as fuck. Like, I'm the worst person to be around just before my period and like the first 3 days. I feel like I need to go into isolation for 5 days. And we don't have the privilege of doing that. Like, I've got to go to work. I've got to hustle. I've got to drive. I've got to sit on a bus. I got to talk to people. I got to like run and command. Maybe I've been like casted in something and I've now got to act, and I'm on the floor for like 15 hours of the day, and I'm having this hectic experience of a period where I've got a migraine, I want to vomit, I'm sweating, I've got a headache. Like, my body is going through the most, and I can't just like put on a label that says, don't talk to me, I have my period today. But, you know, maybe I should. But I just think that if we had more of an understanding, we'd maybe be a bit more sympathetic. I know there's like some countries that you have period leave, you know, that you can take like 3 days leave because you're on your period. And I think that's really important, because I would use that the day before my period and the first 2 days of my period, because my first 2 days of my period is so heavy that I'm constantly having to go to the bathroom to make sure I'm not leaking, or, you know, I've got to take medication and I want to lay down. I'm not saying that like I'm useless, because I run shit while I'm on my period, but I would probably be more productive if I could look after myself in my own space and have a, you know, like a warm blanket around me and a hot water bottle, without people being like, oh, shame, you're on your period, or, oh, gross, you're on your period. So I hope that for someone listening, you understand that the period is really natural. And I just want to say also, especially for high school learners, I always tell them, your period doesn't stink. Like, it smells like actual blood. What makes the period like somewhat gross, or like smell not nice, is that when you're wearing a pad or a tampon, you try and make it last for the longest time possible while you are at school, because you don't want to go to the toilet to firstly change, because it's uncomfortable and maybe the space isn't clean or there's no water. But secondly, you don't have another pad for the day. Like, I remember when I used to wear a pad, I used to make that pad last from the morning till I was finished, and then I know, fuck, now I've got to make a plan while I'm at sports, you know. But that pad has been sitting on the outside of me, like in my panty, collecting my sweat for the day. I've been sitting on it, I've been squishing that blood, it's been rubbing against my vagina. That blood has now become like dry and hard, and like, you know, just sitting there and interacting with other bodily fluids like my discharge and my sweat. And that's what kind of makes it seem gross and stinky, because you're now smelling that blood and discharge and sweat, and it's sitting there in cotton. It's like, it's bleached cotton. That's what a pad and a tampon is. So if you could use a product that, you know, gives you more of a time leeway or allows you to change more frequently, although I know this is really privileged, but the schools that we go to, we give a sanitary product called the menstrual cup. Now, this is like mind-blowing to most people because we've never heard about it. And when I heard about it, I was like, and now this silicone thing has to come into my vagina. But like, what's it going to do? Because it doesn't absorb. It's like a little cup made out of medical-grade silicone. And it's like the same type of silicone that you would get like breast implants or bum implants or I don't know, whatever injection of silicone. But it's made to go inside the body. So you don't get infections or bacteria from it. It doesn't actually carry infections. So you don't wash it with soap, because if you did and then put it in your vagina, it's going to itch and burn. Like I told you, if you wash your vagina with soap, it's the same thing. So you just boil it in hot water and then you fold it in half so it looks like a C. So you literally take the cup and it's like soft, bendable silicone, and you fold it in half, you like squeeze it tight, and it's like kind of the size of a thick tampon, and you put it into the vagina hole, so like not on the outside anywhere, not near the clit, where that little like gap and hole is. You put it in there and you put it as far as you can. Like, it doesn't have to go really high up because it's going to catch the blood. It's not absorbing. And then it opens up and you can feel like around the sides of it. If it's completely open, then it is great. And I do like a little bit of like a wiggle and a twerk and a jerk to like make it comfortable, because it moves to your body. And then it stays inside for 8 to 12 hours. And that allows you to be at school the whole day. Like, I don't have to worry about, you know, changing my cup while I'm in a public space. That's not to say that you won't leak or anything, because sometimes on a day-to-day, you are only like releasing a tablespoon of blood. Although it feels like a shitload, the actual content of the blood is only about a tablespoon to a tablespoon and a half. But sometimes that can come all at once, or like a thick part of blood comes into the cup because like the tissue has to come out. And then that weight of it might make your cup like spill a bit or whatever. So you do have to check up on it, but it's not the same as a tampon, where a tampon absorbs and once it's full, it starts leaking. Like, there's no more space for that cotton to soak it all up. But the cup doesn't drip. It kind of creates a little suction and it sits at the bottom of the vagina path and it collects everything that falls out. I mean, I used it since 2014, so it's been 5 years. And the cup lasts 5 to 10 years depending on how you've looked after it and depending on like your condition of the silicone. So I know that like mine now, it kind of has like, like if my panty had a constant blood stain on it and I wash it all the time, it goes away, but it has almost like a light bloodish stain to it, if I can explain it. So like my cup was completely clear and see-through, and after 5 years, it's got like a slight color to it. And I've boiled it and I've put it in like, you know, some boiling lemon water, because I read on Google that that's what you can do, because that's what a 12-year-old taught me on YouTube. Because if you go on YouTube and you check this out, like Google menstrual cups or YouTube menstrual cups, there are young girls out there showing us what we are supposed to be doing. And that just shows me that, you know, it's something that maybe like a capitalist society doesn't want us to have, because I don't have to spend 30 rand every single month on products. I buy this cup once off and it lasts me 5 to 10 years. And it's good for the environment, but it's not making like these pad and tampon companies any money. So, I mean, they're not going to like put it out there. But we're trying to get government in South Africa to kind of release this and give us the money, because there are South African brands making these menstrual cups for young girls from the age of 10, 11, suitable for their bodies, and like a softer cup for teenagers from 11 to 18 years old to use this cup. And there's no reason why government cannot, you know, like get a massive rollout, like national rollout, and the organization that I work with and for and is mine, Femme Projects, we do like an education program that goes with it. So we're not just doing like a drop-off. Irritates me so much because I know that we can have access to something as basic as like a menstrual cup to collect a period. And fine, if people don't want to insert something in their vagina because traditionally or culturally they think that it is connected to this myth of virginity because it's going to break the myth of a hymen. And I just want to say, not everyone is born with a hymen. You know, a hymen is this thick tissue that sits below the cervix. It's like the middle of the vagina path. So if I put a finger in my vagina, I'm not going to break the hymen. If I put an object in my vagina, I might break the hymen depending how high and how fast and how hard it like goes against. But I could also break that hymen from doing a lot of running, doing a lot of sports, doing horse riding, playing soccer. You know, like our bodies move and sometimes we hit things hard. Like I've fallen in a bath and hit my vagina on the side of the bath and been like, oh my God, I'm gonna die. And now if I had to count that as my virginity, that would be something for me that's like taken away this pleasure or this like important part because I connected it to that skin tissue that might have been broken at the age of 10 when I, you know, those balls that you hold onto and you try not fall off of. Like, but I could have broken that skin then already because it's just tissue. Some people's are thicker and when it's broken, they like release that tissue and some like blood comes out. And that's like culturally what we would see as like a breaking of a virginity and a losing of a virginity. I hate that. I literally hate hearing losing of a virginity. What have you lost? What has been claimed? I do not know, but it's what society has taught us. And I think we have to understand that as like grown-ass adults and as society. But yeah, so I hope that somehow like creates an understanding of vagina, menstruation, period, and that the inside of the vagina cleanses itself along with the cycle of the period. And I think a lot of women don't even understand their cycle. Like I was maybe like 26 when I started figuring out how to track my period, you know, 6 days, fucking long. But the average person bleeds 3 to 5 days. So like most people are like 4 days, that's the period. Nice. My period used to be 7 days. At least it's gone down to 6. But so from day 1 to day 6, that's my period, right? Then my period is done. Then day 7 and day 8, I kind of have like a brownish discharge because it's maybe some of like the blood is still in the discharge. And then my cycle starts like changing, you know, like I can see my discharge starts coming clear. Maybe there's a little discharge. And then by like day 13, I can tell that I'm ovulating. Like my body, like I see a baby and I'm like, I want a baby too. And that's part of your cycle. Like you might be going like your body giving you signals and becoming broody because you're ovulating and you're at like your hyper fertile phase. Like our grandparents used to do that, like, you know, the method of, you know, like a safe time of your period. I don't think it worked. That's why they ended up with like 6-7 children. But there is like an unsafe time of your period, and that is like day 13 to day 15 or day 16, just to be safe. But mostly your day 14 and day 15, that's like your fertile time, fertility. But yeah, I would not have unsafe sex during that time. But a myth, you can still fall pregnant while you are on your period. Like a lot of people think, so I'm bleeding and that egg has come out of me, so there's no egg to fertilize. But ta-da, your body is always on a cycle. So your body released that one egg and then no sperm came and fertilized it. So it broke it down and it's all coming out and that's your period. But you're already on like day 6. Your body has already started releasing another egg to continue the cycle. And that egg can be sitting in your fallopian tubes. And that damn sperm that is so like hungry for an egg is swimming so damn fast and far, and it fertilizes that other egg that's sitting in the fallopian tubes because it's come out of the pocket already, and it fertilizes that egg. And once your period finishes, your body's already started going into the cycle of making this nest, and that egg is already fertilized, and your body starts making a baby, a fetus, a stuck egg, whatever, you know, like it, you are then falling pregnant, and you thought that because that egg and period was coming out, that you couldn't fall pregnant. Don't do that, people. Don't have unsafe sex while you're on your period. There is still a risk of falling pregnant. Listen to me. I am telling the truth, sir. I don't believe that there is ever a safe time of having unprotected sex. Because firstly, you're going to get STIs, or possibly. And you might get any sort of infections. But you also are having a chance of falling pregnant. And if you don't want a baby, that's a thing that you constantly are going to have to think about. And if you are having sex with like vagina and vagina, great. But there's still things to protect yourself on. Like, I think I was like a grown 26-year-old before seeing a dental dam. And a dental dam is like a rectangular or square piece of like, if I cut a condom, like if I cut the condom open and I've got like this, and I cut that ring elastic off the bottom, I've got like a strip of kind of like stretchy, this piece of film. And this material you use to put over the vagina if you want to have oral sex and you want to lick a vagina. It protects the vagina from your bacteria in your mouth, and you might have like something like herpes or any type of STI in your mouth or whatever. And it also protects your mouth from getting any STI from the person's vagina, because the vagina has bacteria and it has, could possibly have an STI. And, you know, that's a way of having sex, safe sex, with eating a vagina. And a lot of the time when we have oral sex, we do not think of being safe. Like, I can say I have sucked dick without a condom and not thought about it at all. Yes, it's irresponsible, but it's also, it's not like ingrained in me. I think the only time I think of a condom is like when a penis is going in my vagina. But if I'm having sex with a woman and we have two vaginas rubbing against each other, that is a lot of fluids and bacteria and, you know, this party happening. And if there is infections or anything, that's a great way of passing it on. And we're not, I don't know many lesbians or bisexuals or vaginas rubbing against each other that are like, first, let's put down some dental dam. You can use cling wrap as well. I tried to teach my mother about a dental dam, and I was like, you know, you can make your own dental dam by taking cling wrap. And she was like, oh, is that where all my cling wrap's gone? Wow. She thought she was hilarious. But you can use cling wrap, and you can cut a condom open and you can use a condom. But I don't know a lot of people that do it. And I think that we need to actually instill that in each other and hold each other accountable. Like, if you're about to eat me and you haven't asked me if I have safe sex with everyone else and if I don't have any infections that I'm aware of, and you just go for it, then firstly, I should stop you and be like, hold up, I think I might have something. I think we should use like some form of protection. Or hold up, do you not have like herpes or anything? And are you cool with like not using any form of protection? Because when something comes out and I've got to phone you in a month's time and be like, look here, have you been having unprotected sex? Because now my vagina is like burning, my discharge has changed, something's up, you know, I want to know that it came from you. I don't now want to like track and be like, I've just been having unsafe sex. Anyway, moral of the story, I think be responsible. You know, be responsible with like who you're having sex with and how you're having sex. And that includes oral sex. And I said that like clitoral stimulation is the best way to most of the time ensure an orgasm. But you still have to be safe and cautious. Like, if you're rubbing your vagina on my vagina and I'm about to come, like, I don't know, there is so much fluids and stuff coming out, and vaginas are going to be wet, yo. Like, there's your bacteria nest. So it's a myth to think that only like a penis and a vagina can pass on things. That's definitely not true. I just want to touch on something before I wrap things up. The G-spot. A lot of people want to know, you know, like, where is the G-spot on a vagina? And not everyone has a G-spot. So for me, my G-spot is my clit. And a lot of people try and find this G-spot inside. And my understanding of it is that it's the back of the clit. So, like I told you, above the opening of the vagina and like above the folds of the lip is this little like hidden little pole that sometimes has a hood, and you open it. If you put your fingers inside the vagina and your fingerprints are facing towards you, like not towards the back of the person, like not towards their bum, but facing up, like your fingerprints are facing up, and you try and touch the back of that clit, like against there, that is where most people's G-spot will sit in the vagina. But that is the back of the clit. So you're just trying to stimulate the back and the front of the clit at the same time to reach like a full G-spot orgasm while maybe penetrating inside, whatever. You know, like you are trying to be extreme and talented, and that person might not even be getting enjoyment from that back of the clit. As long as you're stimulating the front of the clit, I'm happy, yo. And a lot of people think that the orgasm is now somehow connected to this ejaculation and female ejaculation. And I think like my first time having sex, I also expected that. Like, I was like, he squirts, where's my squirt? Like, nothing coming out. Like, just, I'm just wet and there's a little bit of fluid. But I have friends that are like squirting masters. Like, they create puddles, bruh. Like, they gush on people's faces. And I'm like, ugh, I want that too. But a lot of the time, like, I Google that shit. I YouTube that shit. I watch porn. I was like, somebody teach me the methods of squirting. And squirting is definitely not tied to orgasms. Like, you can squirt without an orgasm. You can orgasm without a squirt. And not everyone squirts. So I'm just putting it out there. Especially bras. Like, men, when they have sex with a vagina, they're like, where is it? Like, where's the liquid? Can you squirt for me? And that creates a whole lot of pressure on this person with a vagina. For this person to be like, I can't squirt, I don't know how. And you can try and do it, and you can learn with each other and watch tutorials, and maybe a friend knows how, and you can try. But not every vagina is going to be the same. Like, not every vagina is going to come from penetrative sex, and not every vagina is going to come from, like, a surface stimulation, you know? And you can, some people are going to have multiple orgasms and orgasm and orgasm and orgasm and orgasm. And some people are going to have one orgasm and be done and fall asleep on you. And that is cool as well. And sometimes it's not always going to be the same. I hope you understand the vagina and understand the cleaning system. Understand the period and menstruation. Understand that if you've gotten the go-ahead to enjoy this vagina, to take the opportunity, to take it slow, to learn, to see what the person likes. And if you're not sure and the body's reacting like jumping away from you, be like, yo, what's up? I can stop. What do you want me to do? What do you like? Can I do this? Can I do that? I mean, if you had to ask me, can I lick your pussy? I'd be like, you can do whatever you want. You got full consent. So make sure you have consent. Make sure you're being safe. And make sure you stimulate that clit, yo. Gotta find it. I hope this episode has been informative. Thank you for my listeners for listening in. If you have any questions, even about the penis, about anything, you can hit me up at Lekalolas, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Lauren Lopeshaw on Facebook. I'm not afraid to answer anything. I am there. I will keep it anonymous and private. And yeah, keep listening to Open Wide. Say ah.
Yes, sir.
Open wide. Say ah.